On today's episode, we chat with former University of Minnesota men's basketball legend Trevor Mbakwe. A St. Paul, Minnesota native, Trevor became somewhat of a hometown hero while playing for the Gophers from 2010 to 2013. But it wasn't always that easy. Trevor initially chose Marquette out of high school over the hometown Gophers, but over the course of the next 2 years, Trevor found himself at Marquette and then Miami-Dade Community College before making his way home to the Twin Cities. Trevor shares some great stories from his time playing in the Big Ten and what it was like playing professional basketball overseas. Known for his intense and competitive demeanor on the court, Trevor is as laid back off the court as they come, and I know you will enjoy this. But first, this podcast is brought to you by The Film Room, a free online coaches education platform featuring skill development, team drills, set plays, and so much more. Head to basketballcatalyst.com/filmroom for more information. Here's Trevor Mbakwe. All right, Trevor, I was looking up some of your background, and I'd forgotten that I am exactly one day older than you. So if we were if we were siblings, I would probably argue that I am much older, much wiser. So if that's the case, do you think that's why God bless me being a Badger fan and you maybe being a Gopher guy?
Oh, maybe. That's tough. I didn't know you were a Badger fan this whole time.
Right? No, come on, man.
I didn't know that.
I get every time I post something on social media, I feel like I get like a sad face emoji or something.
I know. I thought you were just being friendly since you coached a couple of Badger dudes. I didn't know that. That's what you, I got to end this interview now. It's time to leave.
No, I'm just messing. I liked the Badgers, but I'm not a Gopher hater. So I had to give
so
you
you're
that.
Confused.
I'm confused. Like, well, the other day when you guys kicked our butt, and the only thing that I had to go back at you was that my seats might have been better than yours, but in reality, I was in the second row and I wasn't tall enough to see over the manager. So I actually wish I would have been sitting up where you were sitting, but. No, I had to give you a hard time off the bat. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your experience. You know, you obviously played at the University of Minnesota your first year. I think you led the Big Ten in rebounding. First Gopher to do that since Chris Humphreys. You won 61 games in 3 years, but you didn't start at the U. And so you started, you know, going, you end up at Marquette. Did Dan Munson resign in the middle of your senior year?
No, Dan Munson resigned in the middle of my junior year.
I
think it was one of those situations like everybody knew he was gonna get fired. So yes. I can't, you know, obviously I would have loved to stay home initially, but you know, you can't go into your freshman year with not knowing who the coach was. But if I would have known Tubby would end up coming, I probably would have signed right away.
Yeah. So it's funny. I talked to Jared Bergeron and I asked him a couple years ago, like, well, you know, being a Minnesota guy, why'd you choose Wisconsin? And he's like, well, it wasn't that I didn't like Minnesota, but I think he actually went on a visit to Minnesota and the Gophers got beaten. Like the whole arena booed Munson. And then he like resigned the next day and he was like, well, not the greatest. But so say you had the Gophers, you end up at Marquette. Were there any other schools that were kind of in that final mix for you?
Yeah. At that time it was Florida. I was big. That was after they had just won the back-to-back championships, Georgetown. And now it was like those in Marquette. I was pretty close with Coach Crean since like freshman year. He's like one of the first coaches to offer me a scholarship freshman year. So I built that. You know, at some point, I want to get away from home, but not too far. So, yeah. In Marquette, beautiful school, big basketball school. You know, that's all they had. They play in the NBA arena, so it had everything that I wanted at the time.
So, now you mentioned Coach Crean, but Buzz Williams was on the staff then too, right?
Yeah, he's an assistant coach at the time. So, but I didn't. He came. He signed like after I had committed, so I didn't have a relationship with him really.
Okay.
You know how assistants' roles are a lot different than head coaches' roles. And yeah. I wish I would have gave him more of a chance, but at that time I was just like, you know what? I came to Marquette for the school, but I went there because my relationship with Coach Crean at the time, and it just wasn't a good fit for me, I don't think, at the time with Buzz.
Yeah, so did Coach Crean leave after your freshman year? Was that kind of the – because he went to Indiana then, right?
Yeah, he gave us, you know, it's obviously that's why I learned it was a business for
Yeah.
4 years. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. And then, so a funny story is that I saw him like 2 days before he took the job. And, you know, we're talking about next year's plan, you know, how all this and that. And then we had an off day and Pardon the Interruption was on and it was April Fool's.
Yeah.
And it was like Coach Green takes Indiana job. So me and my roommate or teammates were like, nah, this is a joke. And then that's when all the messages start coming in. So we had to find out on PTI that he was not our coach anymore.
Oh, dude, I think that's crazy. I'm sure there's a lot of stories out there like that situations, but I was looking at your roster. I mean, you had a couple of NBA guys. You had Drill McNeil, Lazar Hayward, Wes Matthews, Dominic James. I mean, he was
Jimmy Butler had just signed too, so he was coming in. At the time, you know, we didn't know he was gonna be this good.
Yeah.
But he had some good seasons.
That's crazy. Yeah. So you end up you leave Marquette, you spend a year at a community college, but then you come back to Minnesota. So by that time, now you know one of my questions was gonna be what made you come back, but then by that time you know Tubby's back or Tubby's now the head coach. You know, that team, you have Lawrence Westbrook, Al Nolan, Hoffarber, Rodney Williams. Jeez. I mean, Damian Johnson. Royce. Yeah, Royce, Colton Iverson, big Ralph Sampson. I mean, you tell me a little bit about that team. You guys were pretty good.
Yeah, so initially, so I went to community college because I didn't transfer to the end of the season or summer. Because at the time, I went through the summer, tried to make it work, and I was like, I feel like it wasn't a good fit between me and Buzz. So at that time, I was only like, you know, everybody's scholarships are pretty much. So I knew right away I was going to transfer back to the University of Minnesota. They just didn't have the scholarships at the time, so yeah. I went down to JUCO for a year. And then, yeah, Tubby came in, you know, he signed the guys right away. You know, Duvall, he had two top 20 recruiting classes, and, you know, it was a good buzz around Minnesota. So I was locked there right away, but I just, unfortunately, they didn't have scholarships for me at the time.
Yeah.
And they had to, you know, make space for me the following season.
No, totally. I mean, that makes sense. I was looking up the Big Ten, I think one of those years, maybe your first year, like you guys were, the conference was loaded. Four teams in the top 16. Ohio, I want to talk about a couple of these teams. So Ohio State, Evan Turner, David Leidy, John Diebler, they were fifth. Can't go. I mean, I don't think we can talk about Ohio State without mentioning PJ Hill.
Right.
I know PJ.
Local legend.
Yeah, local legend. PJ will be like, man, I listened to your podcast once. You talked about Ohio State. You didn't mention me. that, you know, Evan Turner, I think was up there, either won National Player of the Year or was up there. Talk to me a little bit about some of those, that Ohio State team.
Scrappy. Yeah, Evan Turner, he played unbelievable that year. I think he had a few triple doubles, some big game winners, and he was on a whole nother level. And you had John Diebler, obviously said great shooter. They had all the pieces, man. They were tough. They beat us both times. But you know, Ohio State teams have always been strong. But Evan Turner was on a whole different level, and he carried everybody with them. And you have guys like David Leidy who can do like you know do it all type of players. And I'm trying to think of who their bigs were. I think they had like the Dallas Lauderdale.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Just a large human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and actually, so I had Brian Bender on who was on staff kind of when you were there. And he talked about, I think it was this year, Purdue. Purdue was 10th. And I think if that's the year Robbie Hummel tore his ACL, he's like, dude, if Robbie Hummel doesn't tear his ACL, they might win the whole thing. They had Juwan Johnson, Etuan Moore still in the league, Chris Kramer. I mean, that Purdue team was really good too.
Yeah. Robbie tore his ACL, I think, a couple seasons after that. But
was that
they
two
were,
seasons?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was that kind of the same that same crew of guys that was there.
Man, yeah, exactly. Man, you bring back memories. It was a battle.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Kramer is like, you know, a big guard, can lock up anybody, play three positions. And Juwan Johnson, Robbie Hummel, like you said, those three of those guys played in it, got drafted. And they had like little Lewis Jackson, a little small, fast point guard, could do everything. And, you know, Matt Painter was one of my favorite coaches to play against and with. I got lucky to play with him at the World University Games.
Okay.
He represented USA. So he was one of my coaches and, you know, a great guy. He was one of the first people who called me after I tore my ACL, actually. So I've always had a good relationship with him.
So I do workouts in the fall at a lot of high school with the high school programs are at Eastridge, and Ben Carlson is committed to Wisconsin. But about a year and a half ago, I would show up on a Monday night and it was like, okay, who's going to be here today? And and I didn't know what college coach is. I walk around the corner and Matt Painter is at the vending machine. It's just the two of us in the hallway. I said, "Hey, coach, how are you?" He looks at me and says, "Well, I just got a Diet Coke out of the vending machine and it's warm. So I guess you could say I've been better." And then he smiled and turned and walked the other way. I was like, I like this guy. Doesn't have any idea who. And then afterwards, yeah, I didn't realize you were going to be the guy leading the workout, but I guess I've been better.
First world problems.
Yeah, I know, right? So Michigan State is always a battle, and Coach Izzo with his guys are tough. Kalen Lucas, Raymar Morgan, Darrell Summers, and your buddy Draymond. I see some stuff on social media. Have you stayed connected to Draymond? Is that kind of, you know, I know you guys, I can't imagine watching the two of you guys try to box each other out with the way that you guys played, but is he kind of a buddy of yours?
Yeah, me and him connected right away. It was I had Andy Katz that came to do a special on our team, and I made a comment about wanting to have a double-double against Michigan State. And Draymond saw it, and he had it locked in. So next time we played, he made a comment to me about it, and then we just kind of grew our friendship from there. But, you know, obviously he's a little bit more busy now, but whenever I've been in town or he's been in town, you know, he hooked me up with tickets and whatever I need, he's always been there. So he's a great dude. I've been happy to see his success. But, you know, it was always fun playing against Michigan State teams. Those were really, you know, they'll test you. And when our first Big Ten game was against Michigan State on the road, and I was like, oh, my God, this is what it's going to be like.
Welcome to the league, Trev. Yeah,
exactly. You know, the referees let them get away with anything, too. So I was like, man, I was like, wow, this is Big Ten.
Yeah. The last team that I want to talk about, you know, you got some buddies on the team. Wisconsin was 16th, so you got Ohio State, your first year was 5th, Purdue 10th, Michigan State at 13th.
I don't have any friends on that team. I don't know what you're talking about.
Hold up. You guys won at Williams Arena against the Badgers first year, 68-52. If Jordan Taylor were sitting next to you right now, what would you tell him?
Jordan Taylor, his first year?
Yeah.
Did I play that game?
No. Your first year, I think.
Oh.
I was looking up stats. You guys beat the Badgers at Williams Arena 68-52 one year.
Oh, we won that game. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Of course. Better dead than red.
if JT was sitting next to you, what would you tell him right now?
That Wisconsin was who we thought they were. Bums.
Bums.
No, stop. Don't get me started. No, I'm at 20,000 messages from Jordan trying to debate.
Because he's sitting overseas. The worst is he admitted this in the summer. He's like, man, sometimes when I get overseas, I just get bored. And then I want to debate people on Twitter. So I will post something and he'll come back with a question. And I respond like, nope, you are overseas. I have a rule in place. I do not have conversations via social media with you while you're bored overseas.
Oh, my God. He sucked me into so many conversations. And after 10 minutes, I'm like, why did I let him do this to me?
Dude, of course. Well, think about this. So he's playing on the same team as David Leidy from Ohio State. So how bad do you think that is for David? Like,
I think David learned probably after the first month of being teammates with him that
look out.
It's always funny. I always know because I see Jordan comment on a few people's tweets, and I'm like, okay, he's bored. He gets up to start it.
No, yeah, that's Jordan. Before we go down that rabbit trail, you know, let's talk about your development as a player. You know, a lot of people would consider you undersized for, you know, being a center, 6'8". You know, obviously you're incredibly physical, have a high motor, but how did you separate yourself having to play inside? You know, we talked before we got started, like a guy like Cole Aldrich, who's maybe not that much taller than you, but has, you know, 7'6" wingspan growing up. How did you separate yourself playing against guys like that?
Obviously, I think my wingspan, having a 7'4" wingspan and just being athletic kind of helped me against, you know, bigger, slower players. But really, I was kind of a few coaches, like Flip. So I remember Flip in high school, and, like, you know, at that time he was in Detroit, and I had a chance to sit with him. And he was talking about, you know, Ben Wallace. He had, like, the undersized guys who were kind of transitioning out, like Jason Maxey of the world, who were having success at, you know, playing at a high level. And obviously – when we're growing up, if you're one of the bigger guys, they automatically put you in a post. So the guys now are pretty lucky.
Yeah.
But just kind of just having a knack for rebounding and just kind of loving that physical type of play, and it kind of just helped me through time. But obviously, as I start being a professional, I'm playing against a lot bigger guys, and I had to find other niches to make myself valuable. So I start, shooting the ball a little bit better. Took advantage of short roll. The game just adapting. It got smaller, so it benefited me a lot.
Were you always big, like growing up? Were you always one of the bigger guys, or did you have a summer where you just grew
I
it
wish I
like
had a
weed?
John Lewis summer.
Well, that's that, and that's funny that you said that because I think, John being 6'10", what was he like, 6'6",
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then I mean grew like 6, 7 inches in the summer. But were you always big? And so they said, Trev, get your butt to the block.
Basically, so I was always one of the taller players. So it was like, okay, you're a 5'4" man, and that's kind of just kind of stuck with me. So, but luckily, fortunately, that now they don't. The better coaches, they don't automatically put you in a box based on your size and what your ability is. They allow you to. As I've been paying more attention to, high school and just guys' development, it's been cool, to see like the Chet Holmgrens of the world who
Yeah.
before they just kind of be okay, you just block shots and you stay underneath the basket, but now he's able to use his athleticism, and his versatility.
No, he came to one of my invite runs last summer, and I think he's 7'1". I mean, he is huge, and he blocked a couple NBA guys in transition on like pull-ups. He pinned a couple guys above the square. David Hicks throws him a lob from past half court and he dunks it. I mean, it's funny because, a lot of guys your age, they come out and you're like, hey, we want to help the younger kids, but you got to gain our respect. And they came out and they're like, dang, is this guy the best recruit to come out of Minnesota in the last 10 years with Tyus Jones sitting right there? I'm like, wow, that's a bold statement. But the reason why they liked him so much is he's knocking down NBA threes. He's seven
Yeah.
one. So I think you're absolutely right with some of these guys to develop that perimeter game. And ultimately, I think it helps your footwork on the inside as well. But
Yeah, for sure.
so, you get done playing at the U. You decide to keep playing. What did that look like? You do it like pre-draft stuff? Did you play summer league? What was that process like?
After the U, yeah, I did the pre-draft stuff. I was invited to the combine, which was, you invite the top 60 players, and that was a cool experience. Unfortunately, I didn't have the best senior year. I was pretty productive still, but wasn't. I was coming off my ACL injury, and it kind of took me a time to get, started. But I ended up just I played both summer leagues, Orlando and in Vegas. Played for the Sixers and then the Raptors, and. I had some opportunities to go to camp and stuff like that, but then, after college, you got overseas teams guaranteeing you a lot of money. It was hard to, hard to pass up, especially if you had a family at the time, and just kind of then I was fortunate enough it was the team with Jordan on too, so I was like, okay, cool. Like Jordan had just came off a good season on the team. It's Rome, Italy. Just enjoy the experience.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I wanted to talk about is this whole choosing a contract. And, I get asked a lot or by a lot of people, they're like, hey, so and so got invited to training camp. Why don't they take that? And trying to explain guaranteed versus non-guaranteed deals. You're kind of betting on yourself because you have to play it smart. Obviously your dream is to make it to the NBA, but you like you said, coming off of ACL, having some knee issues. What's kind of the process that's going through your head at that point with guaranteed versus non-guaranteed money? What goes into that decision-making process?
Well, at the time, well, for me, it was this money. Like, so when I see money for the first time, I'm like, okay. And then experience, and like you said, it's come off a year when I was like, it was a okay year. Still all Big Ten, stuff like that. But I didn't get a chance to display,
Yeah.
usually for ACL recoveries, it takes that second year. So, like, in my mindset, I was like, you know what? I'll go overseas, prepare myself, and then come back the next year and try it again type mentality. It wasn't easy at first, but. Having the right agent at the time and just understand the pros and cons of both decisions, and having a kid and a wife is it's like, okay, you know, I've gotta take care of my family and getting paid $10,000 come to training camp and then spending months in the middle of Iowa or wherever, you know, it just doesn't sound as appealing.
Yeah. And that makes sense. You know, I think a lot of people just think like, hey, if you get a training camp deal, why don't you take it? But I know now you got guys that, hey, here's $50,000 for a training camp deal, but you're only going to get that money if you stay with the G League team.
Yeah, and guys exactly. That's are how like, they get you now.
Yeah, guys like, no, that's okay. You know, and I do want to talk about kind of like protecting your brand or your body or however you want to call it. You know, you've played all over the place, you know, Italy, Germany, Israel, back to Italy, back to Germany. You know, I think a lot of people assume that it's super luxurious all the time, but in reality, I think it's cutthroat. I've seen guys average a double-double and get released. Some coaches are doing two-a-days in February.
2 days in February. You're doing 2 days in the playoffs.
Well, and I think you mentioned like a year or two ago, I don't know if you where you were, but one of the teams that you signed with, you're like, yo, they want to go up and down full court press the entire game. Yeah, I'm not trying to do that. Like, how do you how do you handle that kind of stuff?
It's challenging. Like you said, it has its pros and cons. You know, I've been fortunate to play in some great cities, have some great experiences, but, you know, even talking to some of my friends now, since I haven't played yet this year, it's just talking to some back overseas still, and it's like, it's the same stuff. And it's just like, it's demanding, you know, they have that old, a lot of those European coaches have the old mentality. It's like, oh, you just got to keep working hard. So, you have a game, the next day you have a 3-hour practice, and it's like, no, our bodies are tired. Like, just because we practice for 3 more hours, it doesn't mean we're going to, you know, fix our problem right away. But it's challenging. But like I said, for me, for some of the guys who are actually, you know, once the check comes at the beginning or end of the month, you're like, okay, I can do this for another month.
No, totally. And that, but I think there's a lot of guys, maybe they don't get paid on time, or like, I know I talked to Anthony Tucker and he's like, dude, one day we had like 18 hours of travel and like, we didn't eat and we get there and they're like, you got to practice. He's like, dude, I haven't eaten in like a day. I did an unintentional 18-hour fast because our flights got delayed. And I, you know, too, I think the challenge for a lot of these guys, I got a guy over there right now, Ryan Brueggemann, who's a Division II, I think, All-American. And he's over there. He's like, this is the challenge because for the first time in my life, I've always played for the name on the front of my jersey. And you're still doing that. Obviously, you want the team to have success. You want, but this is now your job. And I think that's, it's a difficult transition to like, hey, I don't want to be selfish because I need our team to be good, but at the same time, I need to protect myself.
And that was a challenging part for me too, that first transition, you know, because I'm, you know, never been a selfish player. And then I remember one of the first couple months, you know, it was kind of a hard adjustment. And I remember the GM, you know, have sent me down. I was like, hey, like these players are taking food off your family's plate, you know, like that mentality. I was like, oh, you know what? You got to be more selfish and start doing more rather than, you know, because there's other guys, like you said, they're playing for their next contract. They're playing for their contract now, whatever's going on. And I had to learn that pretty quick or, you know, I would have been, it would have been done.
Yeah. No. And I think that's where a lot of guys don't make it is they can't make that adjustment necessarily of, I got to make sure I take care of myself. Now, moving on, you know, kind of now that you're back, you know, I see that you've come back and gotten involved not only with Gopher men's basketball, but Gopher sports in general, doing stuff at football games. You're obviously passionate about your alma mater. You got some guys there that you're working with. Why was staying involved at the U so important to you?
Because, you know, it was my home, you know. Coming out of high school, you know, people say, like, there's no place like home. You know, when you're done with school, like, you're always going to be part of that community. And at the time, you know, at 18, you don't really think about it. But yeah. As time went on, you saw the support over the years and just being back, you know, seeing everybody, oh, remember, we love watching you play. And it's kind of been great being, you know, finally back and able to enjoy and go and watch Gopher football games or go and watch, you know, basketball games and just like that part. And, you know, the University of Minnesota was great for me. And so I've been fortunate to be able to kind of, you know, continue building those relationships and staying connected with my alma mater.
And I think it's awesome too that Coach Pitino has, you know, been excited, you know, see you sitting behind the bench or, you know, speaking at an alumni thing before the game, you know, not even playing for him, but understanding that relationship. I think has been cool to see. You know, you mentioned you grew up in St. Paul. I remember watching you play in the state tournament. Like your Bernard's team was loaded. Outside of your high school team, you know, AAU, you played Howard Pulley. We've joked on here. Obviously, you and Jordan Taylor are good buddies. But who are some of the other guys that you grew up playing with or against in the summer that our listeners might know?
Like you said, you mentioned Cole. Yeah. Been playing against him for like 10 years straight. John Luer, Blake Hoffarber, Al Nolan. Geez, the list goes on. Royce, Rodney Williams. just I can name forever. Like you said, PJ Hill, David Hicks, Cajole. He's over at the Wolves, and the list goes on. We have, you know, we have a lot of everybody pretends like our basketball just got good like 3 years ago.
Yeah, and like no, it's been good.
Right.
It's been good. You know, so I do have some segments kind of as we come to a close, but we're transitioning to this. First of all, who's the best teammate you've ever played with?
Best team I ever played. Ooh, that's tough.
Three for a loop right there.
I know. I'll say Blake Hoffarber.
Yep.
He was always looking for me.
Yep. Who is the toughest player you've ever guarded? Or the toughest, like, not necessarily your matchup, but maybe AAU, like, man, this guy's a bucket.
My position probably was Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
In high school, it was like, he came out of nowhere, and that was before he got big. And I was just like, it was a morning game, didn't think anything of it. Then he came out like on fire, gave like 10 points straight off the bat.
He but, gave 10 piece real quick.
Quick. I was like, hold on. But and then my matchup probably was Derrick Rose, like playing against it, like, you know, at that time in high school. And you know, it was just like, he was so quick and, you know, controlled, and like he was on a whole other level. And that's why, you know, that's why it's good to see him back doing his thing. But, you know, Derrick Rose is probably one of the best high school players I've ever seen.
I think when you watch some of those highlights, even his time at Memphis and early on with the Bulls, I mean, my favorite is his dunk. I think he dunked on Goran Dragic, like two hands, cocked it like, I am going to take this in the chest, and there is nothing you can do about it.
He's a point guard.
Oh, dude, I mean, that's crazy. So another segment we have, back to the drawing board, the podcast being called The Drawing Board. You know, when things aren't going the way you want them to, or you need to make an adjustment, whether that's in life, on the basketball court, whatever it is, how do you, you know, what's your process of like, okay, I got to reevaluate what I'm doing?
For me, I think just learning at a long age, or a young age, from Tubby, Coach Smith, he always used to preach like, hey, never get too high, never get too low. So like, you know, you have a game of 40, you kind of keep that same mentality, because the game next time you might only have five or whatever situation is. And, you know, as long as you stay on the right, you know, as try to stay on the, you know, right line, as at most times, it makes your adjustments easier. And for a lot of us, you know, we've been playing basketball for our whole life, so we've seen everything. You know, you've seen, like, okay, I know I messed up this time. This is how we can learn from it and you rebound from it, so I don't have to make the same mistake twice.
We had another segment, 2020. You know, the hindsight's 2020. Looking back, is there anybody that had a huge impact on your career that you maybe didn't realize in the moment?
Probably two people. Probably Tubby and this my mentor, my you know, father figure, he's like a father to me, Kerry Sutherland.
Yep.
And just dealing with the, you know, just understanding things at that time. You know, a lot of players beef with their coaches at times, off and on. And then after you leave, you're like, oh wow, I see what they're trying to teach me this whole time. It's kind of like a spark in your head as you, you know, get older, and you're like, okay, I see what they're trying to do at the time. And it's just kind of me open to listening. But those two probably had a great, especially during my college years, you know, being one of the top guys on the team and kind of going through a lot of scrutiny that I went through off and on at times, being here in a big media city, that, you know, they're very helpful.
You know, part two of that, you know, for me, the game has taught me so much about life, and it's given me my best friends. How has your time around the sport positively impacted your life off the court?
I think it's just being a just having a relationship with your teammates and kind of having to count on others and realize you're not in it by yourself. And I think just that a lot of people kind of get stuck when things aren't going, well for yourself, thinking that you're, you know, secluded and I think just playing the team sports kind of realize, like, you know, there's other people that are counting on you just like you're counting on them. And just that competitive spirit, you know, just always wanting more, always wanting the best from yourself. And I think just like all the, that's why I love sports, because it teaches you so many things just in life and just, you know, other careers.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Last question for you. Being a Minnesota guy, a Minnesota sports fan, what, and I like Minnesota pro sports too, so this isn't just, I'm not just taking.
See, I know you're confused. I know.
Being a Minnesota sports fan, which terrible sports moment haunts you the most? Mine is Gary Anderson missing the field goal.
Ooh, versus Atlanta?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Is there, do you have like a, because we've just like.
It's hard to pick just one.
that's why this has its own segment in every podcast.
I still remember watching that game. That was tough. I think just losing to the Saints was tough when they had the bounty.
Yeah,
because, you know, high expectations. We thought we were going to the Super Bowl. Just so many to pick, choose from, unfortunately.
No, well, I've talked with somebody else. It was like, I think it was Bergeron. When we lost to the Cardinals, Nathan Poole caught the touchdown in the corner. I think that was his name. And the Cardinals, they weren't even going to make the playoffs. Do you remember that? And they knocked us out. And Paul Allen was just like screaming, no, no. Or like when he gets going and he's just like, and the Cardinals scored and the Vikings season is over. And it's like, you just, I'm depressed.
Even after the Wisconsin and Gopher football, we know we had, if we beat them this season, go to the Rose Bowl, just like, you know, then obviously the weather's the worst day. It's been so far. It's everything that could go wrong for us went wrong. So
you said it, not me.
You wanted me to bring it up. So
I've had a couple people like hit me up like, hey, we love listening to your podcast, but what the heck is up with all this Badger talk? So I guess we're going to have to take that into consideration and cut it. But Trev, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for your insight. You know, love seeing the stuff that you're doing at the U of M, and really excited to hopefully see them make a splash kind of at the end of the season here. And it's exciting to see what Daniel Oturu is doing, being a fellow big man. Thanks for having me, or thanks for coming on. thanks for coming on.
This is my show now.
Yeah, this is your show. Thanks for coming on. As you hijacked the podcast, I guess.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Holy smokes! All right, Trev. Thanks.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
That was Trevor Mbakwe, former University of Minnesota men's basketball player and 7-year pro. That interview was brought to you by The Film Room, a free coaches educational platform by Catalyst Training. Featuring skill development videos, team drills, set plays, and much more, The Film Room is a coach's one-stop shop for basketball improvement. For more information, visit basketballcatalyst.com/filmroom. I'm your host, Reed Osi, and we'll see you next week.